A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Gordon dives, and yes, he made that catch. A tremendous catch that robbed Chicago of two runs by the Gold Glover Alex Gordon.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future. This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. It is October 13th, 2012. I'm Troy Olson, and of course, I'm joined by the trio of terror that is myself, Jeff Herr, and Michael Engel. And first off, Mike, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
You didn't have any baseball practice today because of all the rain?
Yeah, the fields were soaked, apparently. So I got up about 9 o'clock to check my email, got the news, went back to sleep for a couple more hours. It was really nice. It's awesome.
It's awesome. Welcome back again. If you're joining us live at Royal Man Report or YouTube.com/Royal Man Report, you know I've been joined by Jeff Herr for about the last hour as we talked a lot about the Chiefs and a little bit about college football on the Echo Sports Report, which you get on the same feed as this Kansas City Baseball Vault if you download through YouTube or through iTunes. So definitely check that out if you're not already. But Jeff, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, as always.
You know, guys, it's the off season as far as Royals fans are concerned, because let's face it, it's October.
It's been that way since May.
Yeah, and it's unless you're a few remote fans on Twitter who are still holding out hope because KC wasn't mathematically eliminated. So,
which admittedly I was.
Okay, well, that was more because you were just trying to get to 500, I think, but that didn't work out for you either. Let's start off with talking about things that affect multiple teams in the Kansas City area. This week, there's been a lot of talk about Pioli's going to get an extension because he's already got one in place with Clark Hunt. This coming from Jason Whitlock, who, as foolish as he is in a lot of ways.
Stupidest thing in the world.
No. Boy, I totally forgot to bring that up over the show, but I was going to bring that up. I heard Jason Whitlock say that, and I've actually heard from a different source that's incredibly reliable that,
oh my,
that knows these things, that was a rumor going on the street. And I was going to try and drum up as much interest as I could in that topic, but I have no way to verify that. So I was actually, the day that I heard Whitlock say that on the radio, I was going to send an email to Mellinger and tell him that he might want to look into that. And then I heard Whitlock say it on my way home, and I was like, well, I guess that's over now, but...
Wow. I think it's funny that that's the most excitement I have seen out of Mike about a football-related story in the history of doing these shows, in the history of knowing the guy for almost 2 years now. I have never seen him be excited about football, and he just came unglued.
Get your riot gear ready. Oh, my God. They're going to extend that guy? That's ridiculous. I don't even know.
The point behind that is, the story behind that is, Whitlock claims that Hunt is going to extend Pioli because Hunt is so out of touch with his team, the NFL, and the fan base because he doesn't live in Kansas City. A lot of people like to say David Glass should sell the team because he lives in Arkansas, not in Kansas City. A lot of owners don't live in the cities where they have teams. We just know it because it's our town and the teams are bad. Is the argument of the owners don't live here, therefore they don't really know, does that really hold water? Is there any truth to that?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's got to be a case by case. I don't think you can paint that wide of a line there just because it's, you know, there are some owners that are just going to be more engaged, like Mark Cuban. I mean, he's probably the most active owner as far as attending, working on things, being out there about his team than anybody in all of professional sports.
Well, and then you have owners like the Maloofs who own a team, you know, and they supposedly have a place in that town that they live, but they also have six other houses or so, you know. They've got houses everywhere. So if you give them a I'm sure that Glass has a house in Kansas City. I'm sure he has a place that he lives when he comes to town.
Just I'm not sure about if the Royals do or not, but the Chiefs, I know there's a condo in Arrowhead Stadium where the Hunts live when they come in town. But, I mean, let me ask a question, though.
That's fantastic.
So weird.
Yeah. but let me ask a question, you know, who's the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers? You know, who's the owner of the New York Giants? You know, you don't know right off the top of your head. And, you know the Washington Redskins are Daniel Snyder and the Dallas Cowboys are Jerry Jones. And these are all football examples. But the point is, you know, winning cures everything. So if they'll win, I mean, the Giants owner, you know, I happen to know, used to be Wellington Mara. I know he died a couple of years ago.
I think it's still the same family, but yeah. I couldn't give you a name.
Yeah. Actually, interesting factoid here. Rooney Mara, who plays the girl with the dragon tattoo, who played that character, she is the granddaughter of Wellington Mara. Anyway, but the point is, those guys don't make headlines, and they may or may not live in Pittsburgh or New York or whatever. But you know, they run an organization that wins football games, so no one cares. You know, and if the Chiefs won football games, or more, you know, if the Royals won baseball games, no one would care that David Glass is in town. Now, to your ultimate question of Does it make them out of touch? I think it can, but it shouldn't. You know, I think Clark Hunt is more out of touch than David Glass, but I think, you know, I think David Glass cares less than Clark Hunt, so it all kinds of balances out. I don't know. It's kind of hard to judge those two on that, but I think I think it can lead to them being out of touch because you don't hear it every day. But it should, if you're an owner, it should be their responsibility to push that forward and say, you know what, I don't live in Kansas City, but I'm going to hire somebody or someone who's already doing something else. Part of their job is going to be, hey, let me know what's going on in this town so that I don't lose touch.
Well, and we know that we should never allow Glass to talk, because it showed at the All-Star break how bad he was. For those of you watching live at youtube.com/RoyalManReport, I am leaving this as my picture for the rest of the show, because this might be the greatest thing ever. The disinterest by Texas fans right now out in Oklahoma for the Red River Shootout is fantastic.
That one guy looks pretty broken up.
I like the girl checking her nails. I think that's my favorite.
Yeah.
The one guy is just in disarray, and she's checking her nails.
He looks in shock. The other guy's crying, and she's checking her nails.
Yeah, the one guy looks like he's just, like, stoned out of his mind that he can't believe what's going on.
There's the one guy above that dude who's looking at the girl who's checking her nails.
There you go.
It's a little weird.
Anyways.
On this subject, I think it's Glass runs into the problem that he is always going to be compared until they win with Ewing Kaufman, who, you know, there's always, you know, the pictures and stories about them, you know, leaning out of the owner's box and being on the field and waving at all the fans and all of that. And that's a really tough standard to fight against. Not to make apologies for Glass, because they still need to win, and the first few years he was here, you know, he didn't invest hardly anything into the team. But I think it's tough to make the case that these guys who are owners, good with money, they make their investments, they're businessmen in most cases, and you run these teams like a business. And, you know, to say that they're out of touch, maybe they're not the best at making baseball decisions, but I don't know that you can really say that they're out of touch, because they're going to want to know what's going on with their team, what their money's doing, and what they're getting back. You know, maybe they're not very good at it, and that's fair to say, but I don't know that you can necessarily go with that they're out of touch. I think it would help perception if they were in Kansas City more often. And, you know, maybe you saw them at events and openings and things like that, just for the fans, just to kind of give that peace of mind that, yeah, these guys are here, they're in Kansas City, they're involved, know, and then ideally they go spend some money and bring in some winning players.
Well, to your point of them being businessmen, you know, as an accountant, you know, I think you have what you have here is sports is so weird because, you know, most businesses are defined by, you know, how well they do something, because how well they do directly correlates to the profit that they get.
Right.
Whereas with revenue sharing in both the MLB, well, with the NFL mainly, but to a lesser extent with the MLB, these teams don't have to be the best at what they do to make money. The money right. that they make is not proportionate to how good they are or how bad they are. So that's where you run into, you know what, does Clark Hunt, does David Glass, do they own these teams as sports fans who want to win, or do they own these teams as investments, as businessmen? You know, the only thing I could, somewhat of an example that I could bring is this mortgage crisis that has sent us into this tailspin as an economy. You know, without getting into too much detail, the point was these companies were bad at what they did. They sold bad investments. They made bad decisions, but they made a ton of money on it, so they kept going. And eventually it crashed, and that's ultimately what you're looking at here. You know, the Chiefs and the Royals have the made bad investments, and they're putting out a bad product. And right now, you know, I have – you know, if you asked me a year ago, I had more faith about both these organizations. But right now, I think both of them are headed towards a crash. And it's going to be, you know, next year the Royals going – having another 72-win season. And finally maybe Dayton Moore either making a last-minute plea to David Glass and doing a fire sale and starting all over, or maybe him getting fired and David Glass trying to bring somebody else in. Or maybe David Glass selling the team. Who knows? But, you know, I think that's where – that's an important distinction you made, Michael, of businessman, you know, versus team owner. And right now I think they're both businessmen. They're both the owners in Kansas City, I mean. And David Glass has done nothing to dissuade, especially when I hear him on the radio – and Troy, you talked about how he shouldn't be allowed to talk anymore. probably right, because on the radio he says, you know, talking about that interview they had after the season was over, and he says, what do I need to do? What do we need to do this offseason? Well, I think we need to go and, well, first of all, economically, I want to say, it's right there. Boom. I just got angry, because it's just, why does it have to be that? You know, why does he have to say, well, first of all, economically, let me tell you how what we can afford to do, what we can't afford to do. Why don't you just say, hey, we're going to win baseball games, and we can't afford to have $120 million payroll, but to add an extra $20 million to this payroll is something we can do. You know, it doesn't have to. He has to think economics first and not baseball first. That's why they fail.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to it, but I think also I think it's a little overblown, and it only matters because they're losing. If they were winning, nobody would care if they lived here or in Cuba or in Cancun or in, you know, they wouldn't care if they were in England, for God's sakes. They would have a winning team. That's all we'd care about. There's been a lot of bad sports in Kansas City lately. The Royals, 72 wins, really didn't get the 81 that all of us were expecting in our preseason show. The Chiefs are so bad right now. You know, and it just keeps getting worse. We just talked an hour on that. And then you've got the out-of-touch owner, apparently. We'll find out if that's true here very soon. KU, I honestly thought they could get 4 wins. Now I think the one that they got is going to be it. And then even Mizzou is coming in under where you'd expected them to be this year. And they may get smeared tonight. If they come out and win tonight, this whole conversation as far as Mizzou is concerned is for naught. Because if they beat Alabama, the rest of the season doesn't matter, because that will be a huge feather in their cap to build on. But what is it? What is wrong with our area? What is it about the Kansas City area that produces – I mean, it's a great example. We had on you know, the superfan from Baltimore last week, and we'll have him on again next week to talk about their series with the Yankees and what have you, and kind of to wrap that up. But, you know, Carney talked about having the ability to go to Ravens games, and they had a winner in the Ravens. You know, the Orioles have always been bad, but they had a winner in the Ravens. We don't even have winners at the college level right now, except for K-State.
I don't know. I mean, I think market plays into some of it, probably. You know, you look at who's in the ALCS and the NLCS. You've got, you know, the Giants. San Francisco's a pretty big market. I mean, it's not necessarily small. They always have money. New York, that's a big market. Detroit's pretty big. St. Louis is bigger than Kansas City. I don't know. I mean, it's weird. With KU, it's just they've been in, I don't know. I don't know what their problem is. They had one good year. They had a reasonable year, and then they just kind of fell apart. So they just suck.
I think the market plays into it, but I think there's two.
It's not the only thing.
Yeah, but I think there's two kind of things about the market that play into it. One, I think, is that, let's face it, we're easy prey. You know, we are, as a town and as fans, we're so dedicated and we're so loyal to these teams. The Royals have sucked for 27 years. We still go out there. We still tweet about it. We still watch the games. You know, the Chiefs have been awful for the last 5 years. They still sell out. People still go out there. They buy the jerseys, things like that, you know. So my dad was telling me a story. He just published a book. He works for a publishing company, and they just published the official autobiography of Lamar Hunt. And it was – and Mike, actually, you would – his autobiography, is that the one written by somebody else, right? Or is that a biography?
A biography is written by somebody else. Auto is written by the person.
Okay, then it's a biography, because Lamar Hunt – it'd be tough for him to write an autobiography then. But anyway, you know, one of the things that is in there is that before Carl Peterson was a longtime general manager, the Chiefs had Jack Stedman, and he was someone who was there for a long time. Hunt was really loyal. But then around the mid-'80s or so was when Chris Berman on SportsCenter started calling the Chiefs the chefs, right? And then finally that got around to Lamar Hunt. And that was when he said, you know what, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of doing this. Fired everybody, brought in Carl Peterson, brought in Marty Schottenheimer, and that was, you know, outside of the 70s or the, you know, the 60s, that was the most prosperous time for the Chiefs. And then he held on too long, you know, and it's – that kind of gets back to being in touch again and things like that. And I think that's a big factor. But I also think another thing about the market – is I think part of the fact that we keep constantly being beaten down from the media and everyone else about how much of a small market we actually are, that we kind of take that mentality. You know, if you're told you are something long enough, then that's eventually kind of what you become.
Yeah.
Well, we're a small market, but, you know, because of that, it seems like the sports teams, and you've seen this for years with the Chiefs and the Royals and everybody else, they keep saying – they keep trying to do things the way everybody else has done it before them. They look at the teams that had a lot of success that they liked and they were jealous of, and they said, how do we duplicate this, you know? And so you had, in the 90s, the Chiefs tried to do everything the 49ers tried to do, and now they're trying to do everything the Patriots tried to do. And the Royals, you know, you have Dayton Moore who's trying to do everything the way the Braves tried to do. So, you know, screw that. We're not Atlanta. We're not San Francisco. We're not New England. We're Kansas City. You know, look at, I bring it up all the time, and it probably gets old, but look at Tampa Bay. You know, they decided, you know, the Rays, they said, we're not going to do it the way everybody else is. We're not going to try and model us after somebody else. We're going to try and do what we have to win. You know, the Oakland A's have been doing it for years. I'm finally reading Moneyball for the first time, believe it or not. And it's freaking nuts, man, what everything that goes in there that's, you know, even more beyond the movie. And it's just so frustrating to constantly see both organizations, and I think it trickles down to the college level too. That's why you keep seeing, you know, a lot of these retread coaches and people that were on successful staffs who may not necessarily be, you know, the next really great coach. You know, the teams don't take a risk in the small markets like they would seemingly. You know, you think it would be more risky, or you think they'd be more apt to take a risk to kind of hit big, but they just don't seem to.
I hope that we can really get something going here in Kansas City. At least college basketball season's coming. And I know you guys are KU guys, so you hate Mizzou, but I think even though that K KU whined out of it and isn't going to play Mizzou anymore. I think it's going to be a very exciting basketball season for both those two teams. It's really unfortunate that we won't get a chance to see those two play each other unless it happens in the NCAA tournament, because I think it'd be a great game. Because right now, both of those programs are probably about as good as they've been in the last 5 years, and probably more so for Mizzou.
I mean, they'll both be top 15, I think.
So I don't want to say that this is the best ever for KU, because there's been so many good teams and so many good times in KU's yes. history for basketball. I wouldn't know anything about that, you know, growing up a Husker fan. We don't know what basketball is once we get to college. Basketball is huge in high school out there, too, which is the funny thing. Basketball is the number one watched sports for high school in Nebraska. It's much bigger than football, but then you get to college and it's all about football and nobody cares about basketball. So I've never quite understood that. We're going to go to break, but before we do, this is the last week to vote for us at podcastawards.com and at stitcher.promotw.com. The links are in the show information as well. But head over to podcastawards.com, nominate us for anything that you feel matches us, and same thing for stitcher.promotw.com. That's T as in Tom, W as in water. Stitcher.promotw.com. Head over and vote for us in every category you can. We'd love to see our names pop up as one of the finalists and get some awards for this show. We'll be right back on the other side to talk about Royals of yesteryear and if we're living in the past too much. We'll be right back.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault with, like I said, the normal trio of Jeff Herr, Michael Engel, and myself, Troy Olson. We're glad to have you here. Glad you took the time to download and listen. You can always check us out live, typically on Saturday mornings at about noon Central Time, unless something changes. You could do just like our good friend from Twitter, KC Royals Fanatic, is joining us. So hello to William. He's a Royals fan in Vancouver, Washington. He actually joined our Royals fantasy baseball league this last year, obviously because he couldn't be here in Kansas City, so he did the national one. So we're always happy to have folks listening. This week's show is, of course, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, as always, but also we are brought to you for the next month by Out of the Park Baseball, which is OOTPDevelopments.com. Check them out, too. $40 for the best baseball game the best baseball simulator you'll ever play. We'll talk about that more coming up here. But first off, interesting, this time of year you kind of got to tie in Royals baseball to the other teams, which of course is unfortunate. But I think we've gotten pretty good at doing that as a fan base over the last 30 years, ever since 85 essentially. So this year the big story is Raul Ibanez replaces A-Rod, ties the game, and then goes on to win the game with home runs, becomes the first player in I don't know how many years to be to hit two home runs in a game that he did not start in, and of course they won it in extra innings. So the Yankees, who've got money coming out of their ears, can bench a $25 million player, but the Royals can't dump Hochaver when they owe him nothing this year, or sit Francoeur, who they owe about $6 million to this coming year, but had a $9 million contract on or whatever it was. They couldn't see to get rid of either of those two to improve us. But yet, a $25 million player can be benched for the Yankees. How sickening on how many levels was that for you guys? First to see former Royal Ibanez do what he did, but then to see that the Yankees can bench A-Rod, but yet we're stuck here with the garbage that we have.
Well, on the Ibanez, he hasn't been a Royal in a long time, so it's not like we traded him this year or cut him. So it stings a little bit less. The fact that it was the Yankees, well, that kind of sucks because nobody likes the Yankees, who's also a Royals fan, or they shouldn't. I mean, just by the nature of things, really shouldn't. As to the benching, I don't know. I think A-Rod had really struggled. He'd been really bad in the playoffs, and you know, they only benched him. You know, there's a pinch hitter. It was a platoon situation. Okay, and it worked out. And then he was benched the next game because they were facing a righty. I think that's all you really kind of can take away from it. I think he's going to be out there tonight, you know, when they play. Maybe he won't. I don't know. But it does bring up a big difference between the Yankees, who can, you know, just they have so much money invested in their players and in their payroll, that it what it ends up doing is it allows them, when they need to fill a hole with the role player, they have a $5 million guy right there that they can step in. They don't have Tony Abreu coming up to step in. You know, the Royals are in that position. It's like David Lowe is going to pinch hit there. Whereas you've got Raul Ibanez, who's been a pretty good hitter for the last decade. So it does point to that difference. It's really strange, though, because you've got the you know, the Royals, who have this money with Jeff Francoeur, and they're pretty much stuck playing him because they want to get something out of what they paid for him. And that's kind of the nature of being a team with a small payroll. If you're putting the money in, you got to use it. You know, it's theoretically, yeah, they could bench him, but practically they're not going to do it.
Yeah, and you know, I think, Mike, you took a lot. That's kind of the point I was going to hit on. You know, it helps when you bench Alex Rodriguez and you've got Raul Ibanez, who was close to the best player that we had on our team when he was here.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, he was here during, if I'm not mistaken, during the Sweeney Dye, Beltran,
yeah,
Damon years. So, I mean, he had some competition, but one of the better players on the team when he was here, and definitely a starter, versus being on the Yankees, where you can pay him whatever he wants to sit on the bench and then pull him in when you need him in the playoffs like that. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think, Troy, you do raise a good point, because, you know, again, I think part of it goes back to kind of that small market thing where maybe the Royals just feel like they don't have an option and they don't have a choice, and so they have to play somebody like Luke Hochaver. But, I mean, that's what so frustrates me about the Royals, is that I just keep wanting them to make a stand. Do something different. You know, do something we don't expect. Bench Luke Hochaver. Cut him. Say, you know what? He started the first half of the season with a 7 ERA, and we're just not going to let him play anymore. We're not going to let him do that to our team. We're going to try and bring one of these young guys up. If they don't have it, then we'll send them away. We'll bring up the next guy. You know, I mean, you obviously can't do that too much because you just run out of pitchers eventually. But the point is, do something different. Do something we don't expect. Yeah. Be an organization that can make a tough decision, because they haven't shown over the last 10 years that they've been able to do that.
Yeah, it's clearly not working now, so they should be doing something different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But why? He's gotten 6 years out of it. He'll probably get another 6, knowing this town.
I don't know.
Also, just on this point, I mean, I don't know if we're going to if we really need to get into the whole Hochaver situation too much right now, but I was kind of thinking about this earlier this morning. I mean, let's say the Royals give Hochaver $5 million in the arbitration thing, like we're all afraid that they'll actually do. What kind of a message does that send to someone like Danny Duffy? You know, I mean, I don't know how much Duffy cares about Hochaver or whatever, but when you look and say, hey, you know what? I mean, if I stick with the Royals, you know, as long as my
do anything.
Exactly. Yeah. I can be literally one of the top five worst pitchers in the history of baseball, and they'll pay me $5 million for the privilege. You know? Yeah. So it's like, what motivation do I have to be a good player? That's almost kind of what you need to do. You know, not necessarily send a message of, hey, we're going to cut a bunch of people, but send a message that, hey, mediocrity or well below mediocrity is not acceptable.
Yeah. Because right now we're paying a handsome price for mediocrity. I mean, you're paying, Bruce Chen didn't have a very good year either. So you're going to have Luke Hochaver, Bruce Chen, and Jeff Francoeur. That's going to be like $17 million in payroll next year that you might get. Chen might be a good pitcher. He might be league average, and that's kind of what your best case scenario is. Francoeur, yeah, maybe he comes up and does something again and has another year like 2011, but the odds definitely aren't in favor of that. You know, the record doesn't speak for that. It seems like he's got one good year in him with every team that he plays with. He had one good year with Atlanta. You know, that year he was with the Mets, he didn't really do anything, but he got traded to the Rangers and finished up strong there. He had his first good year with the Royals. I don't know. I don't know what it is with him, but he's there's no consistency at all. So you're kind of rolling the dice, and that is an expensive roll of the dice if it comes up where you crap out.
Yeah, and it seems like they're, they keep – I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but I just can't think of one. But they keep kind of pushing the fault away from people like Jeff Francoeur and Bruce Chen. You know, it's like, oh well, you know, we're gonna fire Kevin Seitzer because it wasn't Francoeur's fault. It wasn't Jeff Francoeur, even though he's done this with multiple teams. It's because Kevin Seitzer just wasn't playing to his strengths. He wasn't the hitting coach we need. You know, yeah. Even though we were exalting all his greatness in 2011.
Right.
They had all these great seasons, you know, or it's you know, I can't remember who was a minor league pitching coordinator before Rick Knapp.
I don't remember.
I can't remember either. But you know, whoever that was, oh, he's not working. You know, so
well, let's go to this guy.
We're gonna bring Rick Knapp in, and I think we might talk about this more in depth later in the show, or maybe right now. I don't know, but
go for it.
Bring Rick Knapp in and he's our guy. Rick Knapp's gonna get our pitching system and the minors back on track. And then all of a sudden, you know what? He's not our guy either. Let's go back to the way it was before. And things aren't working. You know, Chris Dwyer, Mike Montgomery, all those guys are sucking ass again. So what do we do? Well, you know, you get reactive and it doesn't. It just seems like the Royals are kind of listless sometimes. They just don't really know what they're doing.
For a guy who says trust the process, there's not a lot of trust in parts of that process, it seems like.
And that might be the most frustrating part, you know? The clear, defined – there is no clear, defined process. It's like this malleable thing that he keeps trying to change and evolve as he goes along. And I absolutely have no problem with change, and I encourage trying to evolve something. But where is that kind of constant vision from the start? I feel like it's changed radically from what it once was, and he doesn't seem to be consistent with trying to get with having a plan to get where he wants to go.
Yeah, I think there's an idea of what he wants it to be, and then actually within the reality of baseball, getting it to apply that way, it's not working yet. You know, I think they've got part of it where you get your homegrown guys, but there's a point where you have to get, you know, you have to get pitchers ready for the major leagues. And if that means that you have to change your philosophy on development, then you've got to change that. You know, if you've got to update with the rest of the league to see what the successful teams are doing, you've got to change that. And, you know, they almost looked like they were willing to change that a little bit and then kind of took another backtrack.
Well, this comes back to kind of what we were when we had Bill Fisher on the 1510 show.
Yeah.
You know, and we we had Jason Adam on this show multiple times, big friend of the show, and we asked Bill Fisher about Jason Adam, and he said, you know, he's like, oh, he's 4 or 5 years away. You know? I mean, wasn't that what he said?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he said 3 or 4, but I don't know. It's still, like, so, I mean, Jason Adam's 21 years old, so, you know, we're not supposed to expect to see him until he's 25, and part of it is just that kind of, there's this, the Royals are just an old boys club of just baseball people, and some of those kind of baseball people they talk about in Moneyball, and it just made me think of just all the people the Royals have in yeah. positions of power, where they just sit around and they just say, you know what, I mean, we'll just plug him in, and he needs 5 years in the minors, and that's just the way baseball is, you know, and that's kind of what they know and what they've been told and what they've been taught and how they're going to keep doing it. And that failure to evolve and to try and change things and say, you know what? I mean, how can we get Bubba Starling to develop faster? You know, maybe he can't, but why aren't we looking into ways to make that happen? And they just don't.
Yep. Well, on jumping back to kind of the Royals around baseball, there's a lot of Royals that are in the playoffs, and a lot of people were hanging on to that for a while, and I don't know if it was Fesco or somebody else that had suggested if the Royals had everybody that's currently in the playoffs, so they were all still on the Royals, if the Royals had a way to keep all those players, would that team be good enough to make the playoffs? And I say no, because I think you have way too many there's no pitchers for one. There, and so you'd have the same team we have now, a team that can hit, but they can't pitch.
Beltran,
there's too many unknowns.
You'd have Beltran, you'd have Coco Crisp, you'd have
Ibanez. DeJesus.
Right?
Was he on – oh, wait, he's on the Cubs now. I'm sorry.
He's on the Cubs. I think that might
be – Is still with the A's?
Who?
He's not on the
– Was Kyle still with the A's?
He wasn't on their playoff roster. I don't believe. But then you would have had Jeremy Affelt and then Jose Mijares, and I think those are your only pitchers. I think. So, what can you, I guess Melky Cabrera, you can kind of count him. That, I don't think that's enough to do it. I mean, if that was still the same team, you'd still have Luke Hochaver and Bruce Chen and all these guys going out there as your starters, and that's not going to get you in the playoffs.
Well, I just think it's an interesting conversation. It is kind of sad that these guys have gone on to success with other teams rather than with our team. But it's baseball too. You can look around the league, and Cubs fans have been doing this for years. That you never know what you're going to get, you know, with the Cubs, and players go on to other teams and are great. You know, it's the same kind of thing. So, and that's a big market. That's a market that can spend a lot of money, and they still haven't figured it out.
And they sell out all the time, too. So it's like, you know, they don't – they're also another team that kind of doesn't have a lot of incentive to change because, you know, they're going to make their money off people who want to go to Wrigley. I mean, I think they still try. You know, I think going out and getting Theo Epstein, and they have a big payroll, and they've always kind of had a big payroll in the last, you know, 10 years or so. You know, they're at least trying. It's just that, you know, they have no luck. They have no luck. But
yeah,
they could just as easily go into the tank and just be like, you know what, let's just get our sellouts and go to the bank.
Yeah, and, you know, they've made the playoffs, looking here, 3 times in the last 10 years. You know, so it's also – they also have stuff too, and they've won – you know, 80, 90 games.
Yeah, so let's not cry for the Cubs
much. Exactly. You know, it's not like they're – you know, going nowhere, and they've been losing 100 games a year for the last 10 years, like the Royals pretty much have.
On that note, I'm pretty well tapped out of any topics I had. I'll open this up roundtable style. Mike, you got anything that we've missed?
Well, there is a good amount of kind of interesting off-season stuff, just, you know, brief kind of things. There's arbitration decisions coming on Hochaver, who I think everybody kind of expects them to go ahead and offer him a contract. You know, you've got guys like Paulino will still get arbitration even though he's rehabbing. That's just how it works. You can be on the disabled list and still be eligible.
Chris Getz, they're pretty likely to bring him along. Brian Pena is another guy. He could be non-tendered, but I think they're going to keep him around. Blake Wood is eligible for arbitration. He's a super two. It's
Blake Wood's eligible for arbitration, really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, I know. You lose a year with him on the shelf and all that. But, yeah, a lot of those guys, I mean, Polino is rehabbing. Blake Wood is, I think he started throwing yesterday. He's actually ahead of schedule, which kind of stinks that Blake Wood is the one guy who's ahead of schedule, but at least somebody is. Soria is throwing right now. The Royals still technically have rights to him. They have the chance to buy him out of his option for next year. So I think they're going to do that and try to renegotiate with him.
I was just going to say, I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they give him $1 million with an option year tacked on and a lot of incentives and see what happens. Yeah, it's just weird. It's a weird situation because it's sort of his second Tommy John surgery, and I read something somewhere that there's not a great list of players who have had two Tommy John surgeries and had success, or at least been replacement level. So that's something to kind of be worried about. He's probably going to stay in the bullpen. So that might be something where that kind of mitigates any kind of bad value he might bring. So those are just some of the kind of things that I'm peeking at. Danny Duffy is going to start rehabbing at some point, I think. John Lamb and Kyle Zimmer are supposed to be 100% by spring training.
So I was about to say, Lamb's got to be going full swing by now.
Yeah, he seems like he's ready to go once they hit spring training. Bob Dutton reported that Lamb will be starting in AA, and I would bet it's going to be one of those half-and-half things where he starts the year in AA, and as long as something doesn't go wrong, we'll see him in Omaha by the end of the year.
He was having success before he had Tommy John surgery back in 2011 in AA.
Yeah, he was doing well. I think the velocity was down, but he was still getting by, which that just kind of is the pitcher he is. He throws maybe 90, 91. You know, he's not a hard thrower, but he's really good command of every pitch that he throws, and that's kind of where he is. He's kind of
We haven't seen that in Kansas City in a long time to have a pitcher who's got really good command.
No. He's more Tom Glavine than Randy Johnson. Yeah, I guess. And Zimmer, you know, he had that little procedure to clean out his elbow of some bone chips. That's no worry. He's supposed to be 100%, and they say they're going to start him at Wellington. So he's another guy. He could be in Wellington half a year and hit AA by the end of the year as well if he pitches well. And I would bet his numbers are going to look really good in Wellington because that is, you know, the Carolina League's more of a pitcher's league to start with. And the stadium they play at, Frawley Stadium in Wellington, is huge. It's a huge stadium. So numbers typically look better for pitchers there. It's a pitcher's park. So it could be
I hear it referred to a lot as the cavernous Frawley Park.
It's big. So I think that's going to be something to look out for. I mean, you know, you hate to kind of keep looking at prospects, but that's all you got. Unless the Royals go out and sign some guys, that's about it.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. If I can put on the Royals colored glasses for a second, which I will. I mean, we've kind of thrown it up on Twitter. And I see Mike, you've written a couple articles, or at least somebody has on Kings of Pop. Royals' number one target, Anibal Sanchez. I think even from the beginning of this past year, or you know, the end of last year, I think we all knew in 2013 that was a good guy the Royals could target. He's not going to run that $20 million a year type of price tag, but he's still going to give you that really solid production to where he's not an ace, but he could be a number one starter for the Royals. So say they go out and get Anibal Sanchez, and say they do something crazy like they'll get a reclamation project that maybe works out. Maybe they try and get someone like Josh Johnson and try and work him out and see if they can get him for. I don't think he's a free agent. I think they'd have to trade.
I think it's one more year.
Yeah. Brandon McCarthy.
Reclamation Project, I mean, Brandon McCarthy. I still think that more and more that just has the Royals written all over it, unless the A's step up and re-sign him, because I think he'll stay in Oakland if he gets the option, because that's home, and he's went through a pretty trying time in his life, and his team and that team has been there for him. So I could easily see him going back to Oakland, but otherwise I really truly believe that he could end up in Kansas City. He's just got all the markings of a Kansas City free agent on him.
Yeah, but point is, if say they go out and get Anibal Sanchez by some stroke of luck, and they get a Brandon McCarthy or another guy, and who turns out to be a serviceable number two type guy, you know, then you've got Danny Duffy and Felipe Paulino coming back mid-season, and hopefully mid-season, mid to maybe even like August, maybe at the latest, I would imagine. And then, you know, I mean, Kyle Zimmer's a college guy. We've seen it before. Some of those guys can zoom through the major or through the minors. And, I mean, if the Royals are in it in any way, you could see kind of a Dylan Bundy type situation where if Zimmer's killing it in the minors and just dominating, then maybe they'll give him a shot at the majors to kind of help with the late season push. And then John Lamb could come back and kind of, you know, at the end of the season if they need some help. I mean, this is what we do as fans. This is what we do. We have to keep ourselves sane.
It's a long, cold winter.
Exactly. Something's going to keep me warm. But, I mean, the point is, that's a feasible thing you could see that wouldn't cause the Royals to have to sell the farm, wouldn't cost them a ton of money, and would still allow them to be competitive. And then, I mean, obviously this is the most Royal statement I'll probably could ever make, but even if they didn't make the playoffs after that next year, you know, you'd feel really good about going into 2014 if you had a healthy Danny Duffy and a healthy John Lamb and Kyle Zimmer was doing well and things like that. So, I mean we're going to keep pushing those goalposts out.
Yep. Until, I was going to say that.
I mean, 2017, I think, is kind of that breaking point simply because the goalposts won't be pushed out any further, because after that, Hosmer's gone, Moustakas's gone, Duffy's gone.
You're out of space.
exactly. You've hit the stands at that point.
Yeah.
And the more and more things go like this, and more I hear about Dayton Moore and how he runs that organization, the more and more I think not only are we not going to be able to sign some like one of those guys, I don't think we'll be able to keep any of those guys. That's probably a topic for a different show.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
We don't want to get into that right now.
I will say this. The pitching roster for the Naturals next year is going to be worth seeing. Just to give you an idea of some of the people, the names that you might recognize that should be in Northwest next year, depending on what they do with Mike Montgomery, he could easily start out Northwest Arkansas again. You're going to have Sugar Ray Merriman. You're going to have J.C. Silberian, unless they pull him up to AAA. Yordano Ventura will probably be like Lamb. He'll probably start in AA and move to AAA at some point. But to start the year, most likely he'll be in AA. And then you look at the guys in Wilmington that have a good chance of starting out in AA. Jason Adam, who did a full year in A, he has a good chance of being in AA. Brooks Pounders, who was a late addition to Wilmington.
He did really, really well in the last season, too. He was getting seven innings like every night out.
Matt Ridings, who did not have a bad year last year, he's got a chance.
He was an all-star, I think.
Yeah. Yep. He's got a chance to start out in Northwest Arkansas. And Robinson Yabata, I mean, just the names. This is like that creme de la creme of Royals minor league pitching that we've been talking about for 2 years that's finally at a tangible pace, and they're going to be in AA next year. And, you know, you get to AA, and then the majors for pitchers sometimes is just one step away from AA. You've seen him jump from AA to the majors and from AAA to the majors, or you know, you could have, like we did this year with it should have been two players, but one player went from AA to AAA to the pros. And I think you could have some very interesting things happen next year. The problem is figuring that this pitching does come together and it actually does work. We could be 2 years away from really having it all in Kansas City if it all works. But is that going to give us enough time to get it good enough in Kansas City and still have Hosmer Moustakas here to have that base for the bats?
And if I could pile a little bit more optimism on that positive Sunday you got going on there, Troy.
I love it.
Kyle Smith.
Kyle Smith, yeah.
Started. He was in Kane County last year, so he could start at Wilmington next year if he has a good offseason and a good spring training. Mm-hmm. And then that means he's only one step away from being on that same roster in Northwest Arkansas.
Sam Selman,
who's a college guy, so he could move through pretty quick. Brian Brickhouse, who, I mean, he's a little bit slower than Smith to develop, but he probably wouldn't have a chance at Double A next year. But, I mean, it could get to the point next year, Troy, you're absolutely right for bringing that up. I mean, they could have a logjam. They could be keeping guys in Wilmington just because they don't have space in Northwest Arkansas to bring them up. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a good sign for this kind of second wave. You know, we'll see how many of these pitchers actually turn out to be something, but...
Yep. Because if you want to get one, you got to have, like, what is it, like 25?
20. 20, is it 20? Yeah.
20?
To get one good pitcher.
Yeah, unless you're Tampa.
Yeah, in which case you get 18.
5 out of 6 or something.
I mean, it just, we didn't have a very good success. The Royals didn't have a very good success rate out of these early pitchers. You had Duffy and now maybe Odorizzi, who really isn't homegrown. I mean, he comes from a homegrown product, but I don't know if you can consider him homegrown or not. But Odorizzi, if he works out next year, Duffy comes back from the injury well, and then all of a sudden you got these guys that are in Double A that have a chance to come up and really be something. And when they perform at Double A, and then, oh, please God, let Jason Adam be good at Double A, because he's our boy. We gotta get him to Triple A as soon as possible and into the major leagues. But, you know, if he goes into Double A and that place is a hitter's park, if those guys go in and they're good there, at what point does it become that Omaha needs pitching because there's not really anybody in Omaha? What point does it become Omaha needs pitching, so they rush some of these guys to AAA, and then hopefully they perform well there, and then we have all the optimism in the world, and we're all wearing blue sunglasses because all we can see is blue, and who plays in that? Who plays in that place across the parking lot? Who cares? The Royals are winning.
Well, so. Step one is the Royals need to be winning for that. I think there's, I think free agency can help that, and then you can look down the pipe and see, you know, some of these guys. You also have the opportunity, if these guys do any good, you can trade them. I mean, we've named probably 15 to 20 names right there. Any of those guys could be, you know, guys you package together for somebody to another team who's looking for a three pitching prospects at once or something like that. You know, I don't think a lot of the top guys are going to be going in that. I don't, you know, Kyle Zimmer's not going to get traded. You know, but you could see a Kyle Smith. You could see a Robinson Yambate get traded off or something like that if people are interested, especially.
Let's roll with this, Mike. Let's say the Tampa Bay Rays have been looking for somewhat of a power hitter for a long time. I'm not going to talk David Price. Because, I mean, he's untouchable. I guess I wouldn't say that, but the Rays aren't going to trade him. So,
Jeff, the Rays weren't telling you that he was untouchable as in they wouldn't trade him. They told you to stop touching him because the restraining order doesn't allow you to anymore.
Oh, that 5,000-mile restraining order, that's a tough one to get around. Beyond David Price, I mean, they got plenty of pitchers on that roster, and they need more hitting. Specifically, they don't have a good first baseman, and we have two eligible first basemen with Eric Hosmer and Billy Butler. Would you trade one of those guys with a package? I was thinking about this morning. Say, I think if you were going to go with Billy Butler, you might have to throw in somebody like a Will Myers, and then maybe another smaller prospect, if you want to get like a David Price. Uh-huh. If you're going for like James Shield, you wouldn't have to go with Will Myers, but I was thinking about David Price for those trade scenarios.
Of course. So,
but say it's say you wanted to go with Jeremy Hellickson, okay?
Oh, God.
Would you go with, I mean, who would you try and package? Would you rather try and base a package around a Billy Butler or an Eric Hosmer?
It's tough because Butler's still through with his options. He's still going to be around until 2015. It is more of a financial commitment, but
it's also more of a certainty.
And he's got more chance to re-sign here and continue to be a long-term hitter because Hosmer's not re-signing in Kansas City.
I don't think so. But, oh, man, it's tough because I'm one of those guys that still believes that Hosmer is going to be that guy, you know, that he's going to be an all-star multiple times with the Royals. I mean, it might be 2014, 15, 16, and 17. That might be it. But I think you can still do it. You know, 300 hitter, 30-plus homers, 100 RBIs. I think he can still do it. I mean, there are some that are kind of off that wagon already. I think it's hasty, but whew, if you would get Hellickson and maybe another guy from AA who could pan out, yeah, I think you could probably do that. It's just, it hurts.
You think they do that straight up? You think they'd go Hosmer for Hellickson straight up?
No. I think they still need.
Did you mean another guy from our system and
like a package with Hosmer and some other guys for Hellickson and some kind of guy who could pan out or could at least be a.
I mean, they probably got like 37 pitchers in there. Probably they're going to be major leaguers someday down there.
It's like Star Wars clones or something. They've just got a factory. They just make them.
Yeah, they
just go to a warehouse and we need another pitcher. Hey.
I am not one of those people that he talks about that's off the Hosmer bandwagon. I still think he's going to be that guy, but I think I have lowered my expectations. I still think he can be that all-star player and will be, but I don't think he's a 320, 30 home run, 120 RBI, you know, 400 on base, 900 slugging type of guy. I think they're just a little bit, you know, he's more than 325 home run, 100 RBI, you know, 850 slugging type of guy. And that's what you already have in Billy Butler. So the flip side of that is Hosmer brings a lot on defense, but even if Hosmer is 10 times the first baseman that Butler is, just the value of the first base defensively position is not that high.
Yeah, so it's last.
I think with Butler coming into his prime, with him being more of a certainty, I think I'd build a package around Hosmer, especially because – you know, potential seems to be more valuable than actual production almost in baseball. Yeah. So he might be more valuable at this point, even after a bad year, than he ever is. Because if he's the player he was in 2012, then he's never going to have his value keeps going down.
Yep.
So this could be the peak of his value. I don't think it will be, but very well could be. So I think I'd go with like a Hosmer. If you put like Hosmer and Yordano Ventura and maybe you threw in somebody else, and you could get, like you said, maybe Jeremy Hellickson and another one of their minor league guys or something like that. I mean, I'd do that trade for sure.
Hellickson's pretty good.
Hellickson's pretty good.
And you have, 4 years of control with him still?
At least.
So you get a pitcher who can step in that same window as everybody else.
A lefty, which Dayton Moore loves.
Yeah. Hellickson's a righty.
Is he?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Oh, I must have been mistaken. Never mind then.
Yeah, you still got David Price on the mind.
I guess I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there could be some wheeling and dealing. I mean, the Royals are not afraid to make some moves. I mean, they haven't made good ones, right ones, but every year since, I think, 2009, Dayton Moore's made a trade within 2 weeks of the end of the World Series. So you look for that. You know, they made the Greinke trade at the owners' meetings or shortly after the owners' meetings in 2010. It's going to be something. I think they're going to be active. It's just who are they going to go after? Who are they going to get? And that's the interesting part in the offseason for me.
I'm going to reel in this dream world that we're on because let's wait until something actually starts happening post All-Star break here. And see where it takes us from there.
Post-World Series, sorry.
We could have been having these same conversations post All-Star break because we were pretty much out of it by then too. So, you know, let's reel it in a little bit. We're going to go ahead and take our final break here. We got one more segment coming up for you. Something new and different to talk about and something that the three of us are experimenting with. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Brand new Royal Stadium in Kansas City's Harry S. Truman Sports Complex is the attractive setting for this year's game. Hosting this all-star occasion are Mr. and Mrs. Ewing Kaufman. And with a stadium record crowd of almost 41,000 streaming in, everything certainly is up to date in Kansas City.
The Vault.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Badette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And welcome back into the final segment of this week's Kansas City Baseball Vault. It's been a little longer than we expected, but hey, I think that's pretty much par for the course. And we've actually been pretty nonsense-free this week, so all sorts of different things coming out of this this show this week. This week, we had a conversation with the folks, or last week we had a conversation with the folks from Out of the Park Baseball, and it was something that we included in the show as kind of a longer interview with one of their PR guys and talked about the game. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know about the game until last year. They're in their 13th version of it now. And they've become a sponsor for the next month. And so as part of their sponsorship, we decided instead of running commercials, which y'all hate Mike Kelly's commercials, I know, I'm sorry, but they pay us enough money to fit them in there. So instead of doing commercials, we're going to always tie this back into the Royals, and this is probably where we'll talk a lot about the minor leagues, because we can talk about our OTP teams. What we're going to do is we're going to have a segment every show about where we're at in the game, and we're going to compare how long it takes for our version of Dayton Moore, essentially ourselves as a GM, to get through and make the Royals competitive via trades or we bring the guys up or whatever. And granted, it's a game, but it's the most realistic baseball simulator on the market, and they do a pretty good job overall of how the player should play. They undervalue a few of the prospects based on their 2011 seasons, because that's when OTP 13 came out. But I'm sure as time goes on, you'll see more from their 2014 game. It'll have probably I gotta quit saying that. It's not 2013, 2014. It's version 13 and version 14, which will come out at some point. But to start out, let's throw it over to Mike Engel. Mike, how's your team doing so far?
Mike. Sorry, I'm looking at my team right now. No, it was a pretty good year. I played a full season in 2012, and I did make some moves. You know, right away, I wanted to get Jeremy Guthrie, so I went and put a trade together. Did basically the exact same trade, but I did this in spring training rather than in the middle of the year. So we got Jeremy Guthrie, and he ended up being a workhorse. He threw, let me find how many innings I got out of Jeremy Guthrie as a Kansas City Royal. He made 34 starts, 240.1 innings, which is pretty good. You know, we made the playoffs. You talk about the process. The Royals in that 2012 year ended up 83-79, which is the exact same record as the 2003 team. Made the playoffs as the wild card. We got into that game facing the Yankees, up 5-1 in the fifth. Sal Perez just hit a homer. Jeremy Guthrie comes out for the fifth and puts on a couple guys. Lewis Coleman comes in, blows it all. End up losing 8-5.
I'm familiar with Lewis Coleman blowing it all. Don't you worry.
Yeah, yeah. In so it's
mine too. That must be a thing with Lewis Coleman. Although he's very sought after in my game. And on the Jeremy Guthrie note, I also traded for him. But I had to give up Sanchez and Jason Bourgeois to get him.
Oh, I gave up. I had Kevin Kuzman off with it. It's like whatever. There is you know, there were a couple other moves that I made, you know, because I wanted to clear out the dead weight I traded Unieski Betancourt. They have a feature on here where you can go to shop player around, where it basically puts them out to all teams, and they tell you who they'll give you for them, which in some ways I kind of like because it allows you to move these guys, but in other ways I don't because I think sometimes the players you can get back are sometimes better than you'd actually get in real life. So if I had a beef, that would be one thing they could tweak. But I traded Unieski Betancourt to the Nationals for Sean Burnett, good left-handed reliever. Traded Jerod Dyson to the Rangers. They gave me Mitch Moreland for him. That's not bad. So I ended up with Mitch Moreland. I traded Jeff Francoeur. I don't have him in my notes, but I traded him for something. I don't remember what.
For a six-pack of beer.
Yeah, I didn't care. I just wanted to get him off the team.
I think my favorite part of that statement is that you have notes about your out-of-the-park baseball game.
Yeah, I didn't go that far. So on a couple of the features he was talking about, you can actually turn, as Mike had done at one point, you can turn up the trade difficulty, and that helps with that. And I agree that they could tweak the shop a player as well, but I think they should tweak it so that you can kind of put out what you're looking for. Like maybe I want nothing but prospects right now because my first season did not go as well. I'll go ahead and jump in. I actually finished, ironically, with 72 wins in 2012.
Nice.
And I actually did this twice. My second game, something went wrong with it the other day, so I stopped playing it. But I did the first season twice to see after because my biggest problem and the reason that I'm struggling in the second year is I didn't take the time to go into the game and set the settings the way I would like them. I thought it automatically set them for the manager that you have, but you actually have to go in and set like you can set it to do the manager, but you have to tell it to do that. So I set it to pull my pitchers a little faster because they kept leaving pitchers out there that were just getting clubbed in the sixth, seventh inning. And so I made that change, and this year I'm about midway through my second season, and they're 62 and 65. They were 500 and two games behind Detroit, and we went to Detroit and have lost three straight. So, and Will Meyer went back on the DL. He's got a bit of an injury problem in this game.
Yeah, I ran into that too.
I'm hoping that that's not a sign of things to come, but it's been a big problem. Some notable trades that I made or didn't make is I did not trade Jerod Dyson. He actually is leading the league in batting average and in the second season. And I did trade I went to Colorado and made some trades with them, including Jeremy Guthrie, who I let go after the first season and re-signed him in the second season. He's kind of being a little prick right now, though. He doesn't like being third in the rotation. And you get emotions in this, and it affects how the players do and if they re-sign with you or anything else. In my other game, the one that's not working right, I was able to retrade for Greinke and sign him to a long-term deal for about 6 years for $107 million. I think he's going to go for quite a bit more than that in real life. Some other notables that I've picked up is I picked up Eric Young Jr. and Carlos Gonzalez from the Rockies.
That's not bad.
I did pick up Nolan Arenado right as the game started, and him and Mike Moustakas kind of platoon because they actually hit best against the opposite option. So, because Moose and Hosmer suck against, I think it's lefties, isn't it? I've kind of played with that. I think they undervalue Sal Perez in this game. And like you guys said, Coleman does get batted around, which kind of is on target for real life. He has had a few games where he's gotten knocked around a little bit. They totally undervalue Danny Duffy in this game and overvalue Mike Montgomery. So just a couple of notes there. But, I mean, it's a really neat, fun little game. So there's a lot of options to it. I did sign Brandon McCarthy in the offseason. He's kind of being a prick too. Jeff, how far are you? You were out of town for a good part of last week, so you're just getting started.
Yeah, I'm 65 games in to my my first season here. 27-38. I've hit a bit of a rough patch. I started out, I was kept hovering around 500, and then I made a big run. I won 5 out of 6, and I was like 24-28. And I had done kind of what you did, Troy, but I did it mid-season where I had changed my strategy. You know, I started hooking pitchers and relievers faster, being a little bit more aggressive in the base running, using more infield shifts, things like that. And things started falling into place. And then I would tinker with my the pitching lineups every like every day. I'd look and see who's tired. You know, they have little happy face indicators to to show you how happy or you know not happy a player is with their role. And so, you know, if a player's tired and he feels like he's been overused, he might not be happy. Or if he feels like he's being underused, he might not be happy. So I would switch kind of – I'd keep the pitchers in the same role, but based on who's tired, who's not, I would kind of shift them around a lot. And I think I needed to do – I think I needed to do less of that and just kind of let it ride for maybe like a week and then kind of start tinkering with it based on how they feel on that, maybe 5 days instead of a week or so. But, yeah, I'm kind of – kind of struggling right now. Eric Hosmer is tearing it up. He's batting .323, 7 home runs, 43 RBIs after 65 games. So, I mean, he's ready to have a good little season here. Mike Montgomery, I think you're right. They completely, after 65 games, he's got 83 strikeouts and 7 wins, but his ERA is 4.5. So, I mean, they kind of overinflate some of his attributes a little bit. I haven't really made many trades. I've had a couple offers that I've turned down. What was the most interesting offer? The Yankees traded me or offered to trade me. It was a catcher they had. Oh God, I can't remember his name.
Was it like Cervelli or something?
Yeah. And Cervais or whatever his name was, and they wanted Mitch Meyer and Brian Brickhouse for him.
Yeah.
And so I turned it down because Mitch Meyer, whatever, but I was like, I want to keep Brickhouse around for a little bit and see what he turns into.
Yeah, but I kept getting offers from the Padres of John Baker, their backup catcher, for like Chesler Cuthbert. I'm like, I'm not doing that. It's not going to happen. Come on.
And that, I even put, this game has a love affair with Lorenzo Cain, too. Everybody wants Lo Cain and Lewis Coleman. And I even have those on my untouchable list, and they still keep calling for him.
Let me tell you, though, a little bit about my struggles. You guys talked about Will Myers having some injury problems.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my DL right now. Is Kelvin Herrera, Jonathan Broxton, Salvador Perez, Joaquin Soria, Alex Gordon, Vin Mazzaro, Gerard Dyson, Tim Collins, Eric Hosmer, and Luke Hochaver, all on my DL right now. Hochaver is out for, according to this, it says 33 months, so I think his career is over.
No, it'll say 33 months when they have not told you how long he's going to actually be out. I figured that out.
Yeah, he's but that's usually not a good sign. Hosmer, same deal. I'm still waiting to hear back for their injuries. So I've been hit with the injury bug quite a bit. And Billy Butler just came off the IR like a week ago. He was out for 4 weeks. And Gordon he'll be back for like the end of the season, but he tore his MCL or something. And so it's been a rough go of it injury wise for me. I think that's part of my struggles, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely a fun game. It's really fun because you can kind of go through so much of it. You know, you can be as involved or not as involved as you want, and you can go through. And since you're mostly simulating and you're not playing, it doesn't take a long time. So, you know, like the majority of my work I did last night. You know, just hanging out.
Even when you play them, you can like select it when you're pitching. You only want to see the inning if there's a runner in scoring position, or when I'm batting, I'll only do it when runners are in scoring position. So that because I have a lot of speed guys like Kane and Dyson, so I like to steal. But the website is otpdevelopments.com. It's a $40 game, and they do have a iPhone version that's now $5. It was actually $1 last weekend for a couple of days. And if you follow them on Twitter at, I think it's OTP Baseball or OTP Developments, I forget which. I'll look real quick.
Baseball, I'm pretty sure.
They will give out occasionally, they'll have sales, and you could have actually gotten this game for $20, which is why I started talking to them, because I missed a sale by a day, and I wanted to see if there was any way I could still take advantage of it, so I tweeted them, and it is OTP Baseball on Twitter. I tweeted them, and they ended up talking to us about doing the sponsorship. So, which was, I gotta give a little behind the scenes stuff here. I think it's fair to accept, and I don't think it's hurtful in any way to say that Mike is probably the biggest baseball dork of the three of us. And
yeah,
and I think that's fair. I mean, the guy is the executive vice president of creative control over Kings of Kauffman and all of fan-sided baseball. So that last part's not true.
I'm only the assistant on the last part.
Right. But I sent out an email telling him that I had secured me a copy in this initial interview, and I was trying to further the thing to get either money or more copies or whatever we were going to do. And it ended up being a very fruitful conversation. We ended up with three copies for the month, which is about the going rate for what we would charge for a month of advertising. And I told this in an email, and Mike goes, well, how am I going to do the podcast now? I'm always going to be playing out of the park baseball. Hence the joke at the beginning of the segment where he was off playing it, because he truly does mean that. In fact, I've got
mine up right now.
I was live tweeting things in the season, so I mean, yeah.
Oh,
it's pretty crazy.
That is one note on that. This game is really cool, and it on one of the things it does is you can post to Facebook or Twitter things you do.
Yeah, and make people freak out on your timeline. Oh my god!
I didn't know. I thought it was gonna post with like a little OOTP like banner around it or something. No, just the normal drop-in, and it says, you know, posted by Out of the Park Baseball, but it doesn't, like, the way you see it, it's this, like, nice banner and what have you. So I posted that I traded Hochaver for Daniel Murphy, who was going to actually play second base for me because he was a better second base option, but he's a first baseman, mostly in real life, with some second base ability. And I posted this to Facebook, and I have a lot of baseball followers, and all of a sudden it just broke loose. And I was like, guys, first off, it's the World Series. Nobody can trade right now. Second off, notice that the link, it says Out of the Park Baseball. And so be careful when posting to Facebook and Twitter, especially if you have a big voice in the baseball community. You know, you guys were talking about the injury list. Mine has been affected too. Like I said, I'm 62 and 65 in the second season. And I'm missing Alex Gordon, Jeremy Guthrie, Will Myers, Mike Montgomery, Lorenzo Cain, and a guy I traded for named Jake McGee, who's been a good good guy for me. But, you know, the way we're going to tie this all in, if you're bored out of your mind by now listening to us talk about the game, we're going to tie this in because it's going to give us a chance to watch the prospects grow and move into the major leagues. One thing to note, make sure that at the end of the season on this game, you check which players have to be added to your 40-man, not only in your minor leagues, but on your disabled list. Odorizzi was hurt in the first.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of strange. It's weird to see how they end up developing things like
that. Yeah.
Okay, we are back and we are live.
All right.
So sometimes if Google Plus, I don't know what happened, sometimes my computer resources get too high and then the Hangouts can't handle the video. I think Kamler added a whole bunch of stuff to the old Royal Man Report Dropbox, and it blasted my computer. So we'll have all the old audio now, but we also have a break in the show. So just to wrap up, we were talking about OOTPdevelopments.com. Check it out. Go pick up the game. Tell them that the Kansas City Baseball Vault sent you. And it's a fun game. We're gonna do a little segment like that every week, just kind of talking about how far we get and what we see out of the minor leaguers in there, how we can apply it to the real world. We're gonna have a little bit of fun.
Yeah,
with it.
Probably won't get as in depth since this was just the first time, so we don't bore too many people. But we'll have a little segment each time.
It's really fun to talk about, and it's something that maybe next year we'll do. Maybe we'll do a league starting with baseball season where everybody has to take a team, and. Mm-hmm. And we do one of the online leagues because they do those for free. I mean, you buy the game, you get the online stuff for free.
Yeah, I got invited to one of those, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it because I have, you know, to go to work and run the blog and things like that. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it or not.
Are you in the Seamheads League?
That's who I'm talking about. Yeah,
there's
a team open there, and I'm talking with them. So we'll see.
Bill Ivey, who is is trying to pull me into that as well, and I have said no. I have a podcast to produce, a girlfriend that would like my time, and essentially a life to live. I cannot spend every waking hour on this game, and that is what will happen. So
yeah.
I think the real-time games would be a little bit better because you would have to stop at some point.
You check in every day. It's kind of like running a fantasy team where, you know, you check in, you set your lineups, you look at who you're going to pick up, and you just move on. You know, it's not like – there was the other night I went through and I was going to just sit down and play a little bit of this game, and next thing I know it's like 3 in the morning.
So,
and I got to go to work the next day, so I'm like, wow, crap. You know, I used to do this with MVP 2005 for PlayStation 2. This is how big of a dork I am. I would, first of all, I would line up the Royals minor leagues and edit players to correspond with actual rosters. That was one thing I would do. And then every draft...
This is not surprising at all.
Every draft I would add the top 10 players selected. I would also go through and add, like, the top 3 prospects for every team. So, yeah, that's pretty crazy. I'm in, like, 2015 in a franchise, and so, yeah, anyway.
So, anyways, check out the game, OOTPDevelopments.com, and on Twitter at OOTPBaseball. You can find them on Facebook at Out of the Park. Check them out. It's definitely worth your $40. On that note, we're going to wrap this show. For those of you, if you're watching live, I'm going to actually keep recording because I wrote a letter, you could say, that to all of you, to the fans, that explains why I'm hanging up the cape, and we've talked about it a little bit on here, but never in detail. And I asked Mike if he'd post it on King's Coffin. He agreed to, and then in his infinite wisdom suggested that I should also record it as a podcast to go along with it, since that's how you folks are used to hearing me is as the voice. So I'm going to go ahead, and as soon as we cut the show here, I'm going to go ahead and record that, and you'll be able to find it on the YouTube, royalmanreport.com/YouTube. Don't click the bad link I put in Twitter a little bit ago because it sends you to a bogus survey. I can't type today. I misspelled the name on the episode, too, if you guys didn't notice. I can't proofread or type today. Anyways, so I'm gonna read that letter, and then we're going to cut that out and make it a separate piece that will, if you're listening recorded, it's already been uploaded because it's going to be the first thing that goes up. But outside of that, we're going to go ahead and wrap the show today. Did you guys have any closing thoughts you wanted, Mike?
Mike Montgomery's career is over on my Out of the Park season, and that saddens me. That's it.
And his career is pretty much over in real life, too.
Solar blew up.
Jeff, anything for you?
Greg Holland is an absolute beast for me. After I've got 27 wins, he's got 15 saves and a 2.1 ERA. So that appears to be pretty realistic.
And Broxton walks a lot of people, but has a low ERA in mind. So that's pretty much spot on, too. On that note, we're going to get out of here. For the guys, Jeff and Mike, and for everybody that's part of Echo Network and everybody over at Team Kaufman, thank you, folks, for making us part of your lives, and we will be back next Saturday with more fun baseball and whatever else comes out of it when we get back. So until next week, everybody have a great week. Take care of each other and stop booing injured players. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.